Welcome to the Musings series, audio book readings, reading from Photo Albums of the Heart Mind, published by All Book Books, written by monk Walter E. Harris III. Thanks for listening. Chapter 3 of Photo Albums of the Heart Mind, Turning Points of the Heart Mind. Chapter 1, Undercurrents. Chapter 2, The Cry of the Heart Mind. Chapter 3, Turning Points of the Heart Mind. The first section is called Attitude Shapes Perspective. One of the turning points for this traveler's way of seeing the world and living with it was learning of the phrase, the Great Benevolence, a cosmic view stemming from East Asian philosophy. The gist is that ultimately everything is happening for the greater good, is seeking and moving toward, if it isn't already, a positive experience. The inherent nature of the universe is goodness. Looking at various world situations and conditions, some might argue with that premise. But a further look would show that the very conditions of chaos and trauma are caused by the mindset that denies or can't accept the great benevolence. Case in point is the U.S. Empire's military bases global network. The justification for such a system is and has been, especially post-World War II, based on the view, feeling that the world is a threatening, dangerous, and fearful place. That rationale is really a cover for ego's fear of not having enough. So the fear breeds greed. This is proven by the fact that resources from the source, Mother Earth, are the underlying crux of all war-based infrastructure. The Sanskrit word for war, gavisti, literally means a desire for more cows. The military expansion seeds resentment in foreign countries, which can lead to blowback. How would the U.S. Empire, the citizens, feel if foreign military bases dotted the Mexican and Canadian borders or were inside the states? It is important to be able to distinguish between benevolence and danger in its various guises, as well as to remember that the great benevolence does not imply some la-la land of eternal niceties. Rather, the great benevolence is an essence that further manifests when we allow it to, when we live in accord with the natural law. One of the keys for this is noticing where and how the great benevolence is already happening. And the next section starts with a quote from Major General Smedley Butler, United States Marine Corps. War is a racket. Presumably everyone has instances of keen awareness or insights, defining moments of one's life. This traveler is fascinated with turning points, what happened and why someone went in a different direction. In the 1940s, my dad was on his way to sign up for the Army, and some man on the street happened to tell him where the Navy office was, so he went there instead. Who knows, but it may have saved his life and helped create this traveler's. The poet, publisher, and painter Lawrence Ferlinghetti served in the Navy during World War II, and when he saw the bombed-out city of Nagasaki, he became an, quote, instant pacifist, end quote, having seen, quote, human flesh fused to a teacup, and bones and hair sticking out of this mulch, every single building flattened and pulverized, end quote. And he later said the U.S., quote, never would have dropped the bomb if the Japanese had had white skin. It was a monstrous racist act, end quote. Historian, professor, author, and activist Howard Zinn was a bombardier in the Air Force in World War II and dropped bombs, only finding out later that some had napalm, on Germany, France, Czechoslovakia, Hungary. After the war, he visited a town in France, and he realized the dehumanization of war, the numbness of being in the air and far removed from the victims devastated by those bombs. His writings and legacy of activism are now a guidepost for many. Zapatista resistance leader Subcomandante Marcos's transition from being an academic to an armed combatant began on October 2, 1968, when up to 400 students and civilians were assassinated by Mexican police and military in what is known as the Tlatelolco Massacre. It's T-L-A-T-E-L-O-L-C-O, Massacre. Since the initial actions of 1994, the Zapatistas are, as far as this traveler knows, peaceful. Dire circumstances create such turnarounds, yet perhaps people will wake up sooner. What with the current volatility of world situations, climate, refugees, wars, stark income equality, racism. The truth can hurt. There are plenty of turning points throughout history, and every generation learns firsthand what at least one is. Traumatic events can affect many generations, as with the 9/11/2001 attacks on the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, and a field in rural Pennsylvania. In Musings with the Golden Sparrow, Book 1 of the Musings series, this traveler calls the reaction the GWAFT, Global War of Terror, because it has perpetrated terror around the world, the prime example being Iraq, which was invaded based on lies. As of August 2017, quote, number of Iraqis slaughtered in U.S. war and occupation of Iraq, 1,455,590. Number of U.S. military personnel sacrificed, officially acknowledged, in U.S. war and occupation of Iraq, 4,801. Number of international occupation force troops slaughtered in Afghanistan, 3,487. Cost of war in Iraq and Afghanistan, I don't even know the, it's beyond millions. 1,777,129,473,600. And according to PSR, Physicians for Social Responsibility report, GWAFT has caused the death of 1.3 million, not including Yemen, Somalia, Libya, and Syria. These horrific statistics are on the scale of the Nazi Holocaust, but because it is on so-called foreign soil, an illusion if you love Mother Earth, the corporate media in bed with the corporate government, that's fascism, shrugs it off, and the chaos goes sadly on. For the price of a can of oil and natural gas, to paraphrase the lyrics from the poignant song by John Cale, The Soul of Carmen Miranda. A Vietnam vet sums it up. Quote, our society is never part of that healing because they don't want to hear the truth. And of course you have to ask why. They do not want to feel the shame, the national shame, because it is so frightening. If they were to feel that shame, they would have to redefine their entire lives. In the end, I came to realize that whenever the truth threatens one's core belief system, there is an urgent need to deny its reality. That is why denial becomes a sacred cow. And that quote, Vietnam vet Mike Hasty, or Hasty, H-A-S-T-I-E, from an article in Counterpunch in 2017, the My Lai Massacre 49 years later. Next section, Stories Within Stories, number one. In Musings with the Golden Sparrow, there are references to a book, The Golden Sparrow, by Ashtok Malhotra. India was once called that, The Golden Sparrow. Uncannily, there are some similar themes and passages in both books, highlights of which are quoted in Musings. This happens again with this book, and a book by, this traveler dreamt his name, see page 9, Lester Goran. The book is Tales from the Irish Club, the Kent State University Press, 1996, and the short story is The Visit. This page is being written a day before the day of the Kent State Massacre, May 4, 1970, where it happened, quote, the shootings of unarmed college students protesting the Vietnam War and the bombing of Cambodia at Kent State University in Kent, Ohio, by members of the Ohio National Guard. 29 guardsmen fired approximately 67 rounds over a period of 13 seconds. killing 4 students and wounding 9 others, one of whom suffered permanent paralysis, end quote. President Nixon, 3 days before, had referred to the protesters as bums. Neil Young memorialized the incident and turning point in U.S. history with his song Ohio. Tin soldiers and Nixon coming, we're finally on our own. This summer I hear the drumming, 4 dead in Ohio. In the Coney Island of Lawrence Ferlinghetti, a documentary by Chris Felver, Ferlinghetti says that there was a social revolution in the 60s, but the political revolution died at Kent State. This seems to explain the schism of behavior, social and political, that would then unfold and is only recently, post-2012, and Standing Rock starting to fuse again with natives and non-natives, including people of seemingly every minority, speaking out and banding together. Stories within stories, number 2. Turning points can also be the powerful whispering kind that happen when spirit delivers a message. Previously in this book, dreams, visions, intuitions, insights can be received more easily when the false layers and programmings are cleared away. Then, things filter through. Light, memories, warnings, guiding energies, communiques beyond the mass-marketed radar. From Lester Goran's The Visit. It was simple enough. Jack Lanahan had visits, as he called them to himself. He had visits from moments in his past, moments of such pure transformation that the ecstasy of their having happened stayed with him for years. The visits might come at any time. He waited for the calls from the sublime to visit him. He would not induce them, hard as he would try. They came seemingly of their own volition. He had looked once more into a truth without words and felt marked by it. In that place of absence, he had felt free and boneless, and knew it was where angels dwelt, light and floating, airbound and boundless. He was at one with things that lay beyond hard things, seemingly permanent, and all that people ordinarily sense. Previously in this book, you suddenly feel or become aware of something subtle, the hairs on the back of your neck, gut feeling, a waft of air, a thought literally coming in. Prisoners of war, but free spirits. A personal turning point for this writer happened after seeing the documentary Mumia, Long Distance Revolutionary, about Mumia Abu-Jamal. While in solitary confinement for 30 years for a crime he says he did not commit and for which there is ample evidence he is telling the truth, plus he has the huge backing of people worldwide, Mumia has written numerous books, columns, and articles and delivered an ongoing radio segment in one take because it is via phone in prison, which is where this traveler first heard him. His voice so moving, plus the tagline at the end, "Live from death row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal." Never again could this writer complain about his working conditions. For any writer wanting to study a master of short essays loaded with hard-hitting truths, or anyone simply wanting to learn, read his work. As of this writing, Mumia is still in jail and seeking a retrial or a pardon. The prison system has been negligent about providing him with the health care he needs, though some progress is being made. In a similar situation is another political prisoner, peace activist, poet, author of prison writings, My Life is My Sundance, and artist of many paintings, Leonard Peltier. Quote, Native American activist Leonard Peltier has spent over 40 years in prison for a crime he did not commit. Prosecutors and federal agents manufactured evidence against him, including the so-called murder weapon, as in quotes, hid proof of his innocence, presented false testimony obtained through torturous interrogation techniques, ignored court orders, and lied to the jury. People are commonly set free due to a single constitutional violation, but Peltier, innocent and faced with a staggering number of constitutional violations, has yet to receive equal justice, end quote. He, too, deals with health issues. August-September 2017, triple bypass surgery. Without the low man, there would be no totem pole. The photo of the heart-mind that prompted these turning point pages was not a major life direction turning point for this traveler. Working on a sitcom for a season as a production secretary, aka gopher, the lowest ranking job, but it signaled a consciousness shift with regards to man-made hierarchies. The moment of awareness of power was when I was told by one person to deliver something to CBS, and minutes later told by another that the director wanted coffee. The photo. Thinking. And this is in italics. It's up to me to decide which to do first. The CBS bit sounds more officially important, but I know about theater and people's moods, so it seems that since the director's mood could have a big impact on the outcome of the show, and though a cup of coffee on the surface seems less significant than the semi-all-powerful broadcasting company, I think the show is going to be better if the director is content. And the coffee it was, as well as a lesson of the under-the-radar power to be found in so-called lowly places and jobs, like our friends, the Earthworm Nation. First impressions. Here is a lesson learned the hard way. First impressions tell a lot and perhaps the whole story. After getting burned by someone, while retracing all that had happened, it occurred to this traveler that he had superimposed onto the person what he wanted to see. Some of that came from liking and loving the person, but the turning point awareness was remembering how the first impression had revealed clues as to the eventual behavior. At first, the person showed a level of insecurity and fear. After the fallout was the memory that if this traveler had included that first impression information in assessing the person's character, he would have better known the possibility of how that person might act toward him rather than being so surprised. After reviewing and remembering other first impressions, and seeing that across the board they proved accurate, this traveler decided that whenever meeting a person for the first time, he would get ready and take a mental photo, a first impression snapshot with heightened and meticulous observational skills. This is then filed with a note to remember this, that, and the other thing, genuinely kind, hiding something, tries hard to socially impress people. It's never personal. Typically, we think of an ending as a turning point, but a beginning is, too. Metaphysical mechanics, or Tikkun Halev, healing the heart. In mystical Kabbalah, a specific group of angels, the Malakim, also known as Lords of the Pivot, perform a function that caregives the heart or the center of anything. For if the center is sound, the whole holds together, but if the center is not sound, things eventually fall apart. The angels help to maintain the well-being of the pivot, enabling one to turn smoothly, gracefully in any direction, those turnings being physical, emotional, mental, spiritual, all the while maintaining a sense of poise and balance. This traveler knows from experience that after a breakup, a parting, a loss, a change, one must realign, recenter, so as to rebuild both one's broken heart and one's way of relating. For not only is the heart affected emotionally, it feels things in relation to others, those with which one's life pivots around and with. Recentering is also repatterning one's life because a particular person is no longer part of the daily patterns. By adjusting for that and changing one's patterns, the realignment allows one's life to flow smoothly again and allows the heart to not be burdened by loss, rather to feel peace, love, and joy again. The word heart-wrenching speaks to the metaphysical mechanics of the situation. Life throws a curveball that affects one's emotions. There's a twist or turn along with some distress or grief. All those emotions are natural, yet if one doesn't soon adapt, while also allowing for a natural grieving process of which there is no exact measurement, and use the energy as an opportunity to readjust the pivot, then the heart-wrenching can become one's center point. As witness the many people who stumble around looking for someone outside themselves to mend their inner hearts. Turning points happen for various reasons and are not simply an aspect of the heart, yet they are deeply connected with it. The phrase, a change of heart, reminds us, or re-heart minds us. And the last section is a short poem, and I'll explain it because it's sort of visual. Many of the words are just sort of anagram variations of the word heart, and the first line of the poem after the title is here, H-E-A-R. Heart, hear, ear, art. But if twisted, hater. When you truly learn and live, you know by heart. Chapter 4, The Joy of the Heart-Mind. So from the cry and the turning point to the joy of the heart-mind. First section, mutoscope. Whether we remember actual moments of events or our reactions just after the events is something writer Gore Vidal mentioned in an interview sometime after the beginning of the new millennium. This traveler remembers when 21 years old losing his heterosexual virginity while not being sure if his penis was completely inside the woman 14 years older than he, yet there's no clear recollection of what was being thought of while doing it. Rather, the exact memory is of wondering after the event and not while actually maybe doing it. Memories, like onions, are layered. There's a word for it, palimpsest. Parchment from which earlier writing has been removed to clear it for new writing. And another, patina, which sounds like a woman's name, is the greenish film on old bronze, which seems fitting for a nostalgic memory. Then there's selective memory. The picture show this traveler saw in his childhood but can't remember exactly where, except that it was in a waiting room. Perhaps a doctor's or dentist's, at least the memory of a waiting room, but what is selectively significant is the mutoscope, a motion picture device with a hand crank. Or maybe it was at an arcade, because the mutoscope is known for showing little peep shows after you pop a coin in the slot and crank the handle. But the point is the memory of the childlike wonder. The mutoscope, like a flip book, had black and white silver-based photographic prints attached to a core like a Rolodex, and as you cranked the handle, eyes looking through the slot like up-close binoculars into a magical little world, you could see the still-life images come to life. The people moving a bit jerkily with their gestures. Suddenly, a world of solid objects becoming animated. And what now is a knowing that if you put things in their proper order, then speed them up, those things could come alive. The way the heart flutters and races when one is in love or simply experiencing joy, or how you make all the fastidious preparations for a journey. Then, suddenly, trees are picture flipping past as you look out the car window, or houses becoming smaller and smaller as the airplane lifts up into the clouds. Born again and again, and no photo album would be complete without a picture of one's mother. This traveler wishes that every child be as lucky as he, with a mom that is both a mother and a dear friend. She is a role model for heart-mind, loving as moms are known to be, yet also a deep thinker, sometimes back-patting behind the heart, and sometimes giving tell-it-like-it-is advice that makes this son use his mind to figure something out, see something anew. At some point in my troubled teens and early 20s, I considered suicide, but the thing that stopped it was thinking, I couldn't do that to my mom. Because of her, this traveler was born again. And over the years of his trying on more hats than a bald man at a hat store, her steady, unconditional love and understanding proved a lighthouse. When this traveler found a spiritual path, and or a spiritual path found him, he took on another name to help ally with an inner, timeless self-purpose, as well as to help break free from the limitations of thinking of his self as confined only to this lifetime. It all took some explaining, but Mom understood, and as a result, this traveler understood that he would always be her son and friend, no matter what he became. Journeying onward, this traveler met what mystical Kabbalah calls the Divine Mother, or Mother of Mothers. One of the tests to meet that mother was a longer than 9-month stretch of learning to simply be with issues, questions, and information, to look at situations from all sides, to encompass or become around them, so as to ultimately give birth to a deeper level of understanding. In Hebrew, bina, the word used to describe the Divine Mother's basic function. Bina derives from the root bein, b-e-y-n, bet yod nun, which means between, as in to distinguish, discern between points of time, truth and lies, to sift. A good mother needs to know. More recently, encouraged by the wise ways of native peoples, this traveler is learning to relate consciously with Mother Earth. No matter the space between oneself and one's mothers, the feelings can always be felt. From sin to grin. Bless me, Father, for I have grinned. An original sin seems nothing more than karma from a previous lifetime, but not a sin. No, that is a twisted thing to put upon a newborn who from day one hasn't done a dang thing sinful. Rather, probably has a stain on his/her evolutionary process needing cleansing. To label it a sin and imprint that upon a newborn is for control and amnesiafication, as with the circa 325 AD Council of Nicaea's banning of the consciousness of the transmigration of souls. So-called sin turning the joy of the heart-mind into a cry, and eventually wounded children become adults, suddenly discovering the inner child when it was there from the get-go. On a Saturday, inside a photo booth, this traveler as a young teenager posing for photos with his dad, making fake, serious faces, then smiles, behind the little curtain with father, no confessions, simply having a good time. Healing, medicine, harmony. This page takes a little explaining because the title is the transliteration of the ancient Chinese pictograph for healing, medicine, and harmony. And the picture shows a frame or a tree with the trunk and branches up, the roots down, with a drum, and then bells, and then on top are sprouts, herbs, grasses. True healing has to do with restoring harmony and wholeness. The pictograph without the sprouts, herbs, grasses signifies music, joy, happiness, revealing that music, joy, and happiness are instrumental parts, no pun intended, of the healing process, and for restoring harmony, no pun intended. Humor helps too. Yellow Emperor's Healing Music is an ancient Chinese classic that utilizes musical tones for health and well-being. Native peoples consider the drum to be the heartbeat of Mother Earth. Bells, small and large, are used ceremoniously in Tibetan and Asian temples and rituals. The Chinese, East Indian, and Native peoples know much about the healing properties of natural herbs and songs. The Lakota sacred prayer pipe, as well as the burning of sage, are known for healing and harmony. Native peoples refer to wise use of totems as good medicine. The tree of life, the essence of mystical Kabbalah, is recognized universally. As brief explanation, the ancient Chinese pictographs, So the same pictograph without the sprouts, herbs, grasses is music, joy, and happiness. So with the same picture plus that, it means healing, medicine, harmony. So that is one of the bonuses of having the actual book, is there are some of these ancient Chinese pictographs, and especially later on in the book, the ancient Chinese pictographs for the Tao De Ching. Each picture graph for each one, the Dao, the De, and the Qing, also Dao, De, Yi, Jin, another pronunciation and interpretation. Presence. At around age 40, this traveler felt so down and out that he wondered if he was going to drift off, check out, and leave his body. With much soul-searching, self-discipline, and receptivity, along the lines of the opening line of the prayer of St. Francis, Lord, make me an instrument of thy peace, an inner joy guided by a presence I call the Father began to happen. It is not the biological Father, nor is it a Christian reference, though there was the feel of being born again in the same body. Rather than try to define the somewhat indefinable, this traveler will simply say, it is a presence that often feels like a loving and honest father, and his voice can be subtly heard, sometimes quite clearly, other times not as much. The experience is similar to stories this traveler has heard from others where, whatever one calls it, a presence or power bigger than oneself steps in to correct, guide, scold, teach, comfort, whatever is needed in the moment and depending on the situation. The presence is an invisible heart-mind string playing a musicless music. And the next section has song lyrics for the header by Hoyt Axton, Joy to the World. Singing joy to the world now, all the boys and girls now. Joy to the fishes in the deep blue sea. Joy to you and me. America is still catching up from its Puritan beginnings, so it went the other extreme, glorifying the tease, the seduction, the fixation on the exposure of flesh. In his 20s, this traveler went to a nude hot springs in the mountains of Colorado. For the first 15 minutes seeing naked bodies, it was like, oh my God. But then, suddenly, it simply became normal and natural. That's how we look. And someone else just arrived. Such an interesting shape. There's a balance point of sacred sexuality that gets misinterpreted as sacrilegious because, well, religion tends to have restrictive, if not downright judgmental, rules about sexuality. So here's one to tickle the proverbial fancy. Quote, Lama Drukpa Khunli, who lived in the 15th to 16th century and who was popularly known as the Mad Saint or Divine Madman for his unorthodox ways of teaching. Khunli's organ, as painted, is called the Thunderbolt of Flaming Wisdom, as it unnerved demons and demonesses and subdued them. It is also said that he is perhaps the only saint in the religions of the world who was almost exclusively identified with the phallus and its creative power. It is for this reason that his phallus as a symbol is depicted in paintings on the walls of the houses, and he is shown in Tanka paintings holding a wooden stick with penis head. End quote. One can learn about sacred sexuality from various cultures. For example, the Hindu lingam, phallus, in Sanskrit, shaft of light, and yoni, vulva, womb, abode, source. Many cultures also honor what are called temple prostitutes, as well as hieros gamos, Greek for sacred or inner wedding, or in Asia, Ishvara. And the last section of this chapter, the joy of the heart-mind, friends forever. One of the greatest joys is laughter. Unless you're like some mad scientist evil villain, or you work for Monsanto or another such corporate agribusiness behemoth, no offense to moths, and have a devious laugh, it is virtually impossible to hurt someone while laughing. Laughter is like if orgasms were funny. Actually, sometimes they are, at least just after. Laughter is like music because it knows no language borders. Laughter can also provide a cardiovascular workout, aid your digestion, belly laugh, give your face a makeover, and make you pee your pants. A secret about comedy. What's often funny is surprises or unexpected combinations. For example, an elephant walks into a bar is already a humorous setup. If you can see the incongruous humor of everyday life or in a certain sticky situation, laughter, as with light, can help you through. Speaking of getting through, the following photo reminds this traveler that a loving presence is often the best medicine, even though laughter claims to be that. A smiling golden retriever standing next to this traveler as he sat at the kitchen table in the house of two friends, husband and wife. During the conversation, the dog smiling and beaming, this traveler occasionally patting her, touching the silky golden hair, the dog a picture of ever being there for someone else and glad to be of service. The friend's car with the dog's name on the license plate, the dog still traveling with him, though the dog and the friend's wife are in the spirit world, and through all that, the friend still laughs and feels joy. So that's it for that chapter, and the next chapter, chapter 5, is Society's Ploys and Plays. So thanks for listening and have a good one.